So now we have seen something of the spirit which was there at the time of Christ. What was happening is that in that environment something much more intense was going on than people normally realize. We think that we are it. And now we are here, we have discovered India and this and that. At that time there were so many people honestly and seriously searching and going ways which were often much more arduous than what we are doing at the time now. It was in this environment of all this searching, sects, hermetism, Gnosticism, and there were many, many sects, one may say almost as many sects as there were interesting people. Interesting people who had a realization. Interesting people who had become masters, teachers, what we would call gurus. There were many all over. For instance, in Alexandria there was Ammonius Saccas. Have you ever heard about Ammonius Saccas? One doesn't know who he actually is. He was the teacher of Plotinus, who created that magnificent Neoplatonism, which is so close to many things Sri Aurobindo has said, and Sri Aurobindo doing very well. And he was the teacher of Origenus, who became one of the greatest church fathers of Christianity, Ammonius Saccas, unknown. It makes me, there are always these influential people who disappear into the background. Have you heard about Albertus Magnus? Albertus the Great, Bishop of Cologne, the teacher of Thomas Aquinas and Meister Eckhart. Nobody knows Albertus Magnus. He was such a great king, so they were there, that the world was full of that. The world was full of an intense happiness. At that time, in Hellenism, around the year minus one, plus one. And of that intense aspiration, all this was concentrated here and there. They sought each other. They had heard, and they traveled. They were mighty travelers. And one of these things what was growing was the story of Jesus of Nazareth. Who was Jesus of Nazareth? Well, number one, at that time, Judaism was much more complex. You know, as I just said, everything is always much more unexpected and much more complex than one thinks. The mind is a simplifier, the great simplifier. In Judaism, there were the Sadducees. Sadducees, mainly the priestly caste, sticking very closely to numerous and Deuteronomy, the books in the Bible. They were the priest caste, the priestly caste in Jerusalem. And they were also very closely connected to this Greek Hellenistic culture. At a certain moment in Jerusalem, somebody was building a gymnasium. What is a gymnasium? The word itself says gymnos is naked. This is where they were practicing all the sports, like in Athens, Greece, everywhere in the whole Greek world. They came on to Jerusalem, but sorry, for a Jew, you do not expose yourself. And they had to practice there, so these were matters of great scandal. The Sadducees were very two-sided. Then you had the Pharisees. The Gospels are full of the Pharisees. They were the people who studied books. They were the pundits of that time. These were Orthodox people who followed the prescriptions. These were the people who studied. Then there were the Hasidim. Hasidim were very pure. They let their hair grow and that. They were dedicated to God. Their life was dedicated to God. And then there were the Essenes. Ah, the Essenes, that is the mystery sense, you know? But now more and more one finds, because the Essenes have always been connected with Qumran. And it seems now, I have read some of the latest literature, by Gabriele Boccaccini and others, and the Groningen hypothesis, that Qumran would be a sect of the Essenes. And the Essenes were everywhere. One writing says that there were 4,000 of them. 4,000 there in that small Judea was a great number, a high number. So the Essenes were everywhere. In what way was Christ connected with the Essenes? Nobody knows. Be assured that all these are guesses. And my point is always to say, see, this I know, this I know, this I know, founded on this, that, and the other source, but here I do not know anymore, there I stop. In what way was he connected? Nobody knows, but surely he was connected with John the Baptist, who was a very great figure. Because Christ, remember, according to the Gospels, and the Gospels are doctored, but according to the Gospels, he was baptized by John the Baptist. And what happened? A dove came down into him. Now, here we can suppose what that dove was. It was the Hansa, the soul. At that time, Jesus of Nazareth became the avatar, the divine descended into him. This happens, there are all kinds of different avatars. Sri Aurobindo was an atheist, let's not forget that. He was Western educated, he was an unbeliever. Till at a certain moment he had his experiences. The mother has become the mother, and she has described it very clearly in her prayers and meditations, in Paris on a day. And then, in these prayers you find, now she was the mother. At a certain moment, Sri Aurobindo must have become the avatar. But he has never written when, although he has written, 50 times about his experience of 1908, the kind of Buddhistic experience that the whole world became with Lele in Baroda. He has written about his experience in jail, when everything became Krishna, the divine. The others he has not written so much more anymore, but there were the four great experiences. When did he become the avatar? We don't know. Because, like for instance, Chaitanya. Sri Aurobindo writes somewhere that Chaitanya and Sri Ramakrishna were at least as great avatars as Christ. But Chaitanya was only sporadically. Then all at once he became Krishna. Then it faded, and he became Chaitanya. And he became. There are all different things. It is so pitiful always to read this procrastination. Cutting, you know, everything has been the same according to the same. Everything is always different. So here, John the Baptist must have been the one who gave him the initiation, by way of speaking. It's a word. How were they connected with their sins and all that? We do not know. But there is something else. If Christ came, from then his mission, and his first disciples were disciples of John the Baptist, another type written in the Gospel. You know, how does one become a master like that? Here we see all things. We see all kinds of people coming. We know about all kinds of sects and opinions and things in the whole world. How does one become a master? By irradiating something. He surely had had a training. He had followed a path. Where had he been? The most short way, the shortest way from Judea was Egypt. Everybody went from Judea to Egypt. This was a highway. They came there to fight, they came there to trade, they came there to visit. And there was Alexandria, with that huge Jewish community. Possibility. Apollonius of Tyana, who did all the things Christ has done, and who got a temple dedicated to him by an empress. who was a wonderful fellow. He could do miracles just like that, you know. He had been to India. This is a historical fact. Since Alexander, people went to India. Indians came to the West since Ashoka. The great emperor Ashok converted to Buddhism and he instituted missions, missionaries in all directions to spread Buddhism. It's a historical fact that missionaries have been in Greece, mainland Greece, that missionaries have been to Alexandria, surely, where would they otherwise go? So as I have already said, somebody has written very clearly that the whole spirituality about which we have been speaking of that time was supported from the East. And it is very important to realize that up to now, it's only now that the minds are opening. Now. Up to now, everything has been closed. There is a wonderful book, The Closing of the European Mind. First, by Christianity. Everything was burned and you were condemned and burned and also if you believed in these other things which were not dogmatic. And after that, by the reaction against Christianity. The modern spirit. Modernism. Enlightenment, where do we get the facts? The facts have been hidden and mostly destroyed. Now comes the time of the reopening of the mind, which is no longer the European mind, but which is now the worldwide mind, East and West. Where did Christ come, Jesus of Nazareth come from? Big question. But he was a master. People came to him. And he had a group. And it is probable that he had close connections with the Athenians. Why? Because everywhere where he went, there were people he knew. He went to that house, and he ate with these ones, and he drank with these ones. It was scandalous. And when, for instance, he comes to Jerusalem, and I have to have the Passover meal. He says, you go there and you will see a man doing that and he will guide you to the house where he... How could he know that if there was not an organization behind him? He was traveling with his disciples. With his disciples were their women. With his disciples were their mothers. Because one of these mothers went to Christ. And she said, Lord, or Rabbi, you know my two sons, you give them a best position when you are here. This is in the Gospels. There was this whole group, Martha, Lazarus, her sister, all the Marias, the Magdalene, the thing. There was a whole organization. Now for me, according to what concerns Christ, I always base myself on Sierra Vino. Because Sierra Vino had so much studied and had such an insight and had something behind the insight. He says, when he talks about Christianity, the parent Buddhism. The parent Buddhism. So this means that Christianity had to do. I have been thinking about that for a long time, but I didn't understand. Then you say, how did these Buddhists come there? How did Christ contact these Buddhists? Like Holger Kersten. But this question is wrong. The Buddhists had been there. And there were organizations that were closely connected with Buddhism, especially the monastic organizations. Because monasticism is contrary to everything Judaism stands for. Judaism, the Hebrews, are the people of God. Everybody is a priest in his house. The house is as holy as the synagogue, if not holier. The Lord of the house, the father of the family, is presiding. And you have to marry before a certain age and you have to procreate. This is totally contrary to the spirit of monasticism. You have to live in the world. The world is good. God has created, Jehovah has created a good world. And then you see these essences taking their distances. You see in Alexandria, always Alexandria, a sect called the Theraputa. It's like that. I'm sorry for my pronunciation, but I go through so many languages with these impossible things, and I always fall back Thera on the original Greek. This means the healers. And this sect has been, this is historical, explicitly described by Philo, or Philo, who was a great philosopher, who was a Jew in Alexandria, and who connected the Platonic thinking with the Judaic Bible. He was so great that later he had been held to be one of the fathers of the church, but he was a Jew. So he had described this sect, and this sect was living a life very beautiful, totally detached, men and women together in that spirit. So now, when thinking about the parent Buddhism, it became clear all at once that in the East, in all what we have been saying up to now, there is not love as such. What you have is the golden rule: do to others as you would like them to do to you. What you have is the command: thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I'm sorry, how can you command somebody to love? How can you do? So the first thing is, the golden rule was everywhere. And now there is a whole book written by Karen Armstrong about the golden rule over the whole world. But the golden rule and Buddhism are not the same. Remember Amitabha the Buddha. On the point, on the verge of entering Nirvana, who turns back and says, I will not go as long as the whole humanity is not liberated. They call that the Buddhist compassion, elementary Buddhism, but in fact you could call it love. And all at once I saw in the whole picture of the Middle East at that time, this did not exist. Now I have for long already taken that Christ represented the soul among the people of the Lord. The soul is love. Mother has said Christ was an avatar of love. So all these things are there. Number one, Christ was an avatar. Sri Aurobindo has written in the thoughts and aphorisms, you know, there are four things which people say have never existed. Troy, Christ, Krishna in Vrindavan, and the Krishna of the Gita. He said, no four facts have ever had a greater influence on humanity than these four things which never existed. And he said, from his cross, Christ humanized Europe. I hope to come there before. But this is, he was the avatar of God. And you have, he had that from somewhere. Parent Buddhism. How or what, nobody knows. Has he been in India? Possible. Has he been in Egypt? Very possible. And he became that master who lived like that. He had the realization. He had become the avatar. Sri Aurobindo said partial avatar. He called him an Amshan avatar. What is that? Amshan is a part. We are all unctions of a certain power of God, of a certain God. It is very well known here in Hinduism that you can realize through your lives, and the realization maybe in this life or a future one, to become the unction of God. And a God is always a power of the ineffable divine. Why does Sri Aurobindo say that? It's very clear. Christ is always speaking about the Father. And somebody says, Lord, you are good. Rabbi, you are good. Whom are you calling good? Only one is good, the Father. And when he has to go through his ordeal, he prays, let this chalice pass away from me if it pleases you. If not, I will go through it. Surely there was a difference. In the pure avatar, there is no difference. There is identity with the divine. That is the reason that he calls him Amshan Avatar. And then there is something, the other point. So many people are saying that Christ didn't die on the cross. Then I say, they are wrong. Basing myself on what I have learned in Sri Aurobindo and another, because the avatar has come to take up the whole burden of humanity and bring it one step forward. Somebody says to Sri Aurobindo, for you it's easy. You are God. You are divine. Sri Aurobindo says, how can you say that? If what we are doing is not real, he means as an avatar, then it has no meaning. If Christ did not die on the cross, it has no meaning. And there are stories, old stories from that time, that I say, Christ was laughing while somebody else was dying on the cross. And I name, if I am not mistaken, Simon of Cyrene. How could that be? It has nothing to see with the work he had to do. He had come, the sole love among the people of the law. And that, of course, was the eternal friction between the Pharisees, who could not understand that. There are the prescriptions. There is the Sabbath, there is the circumcision, there is all that. You have to do that, otherwise you are not good, you are not... Christ said, to hell with all that, not in the same question. What counts is this. He was psychologizing the law. It is inward. You say, if you sleep with the neighbor's wife, you are doing wrong. I say, if you desire your neighbor's wife, you are doing wrong. You see the difference? So everything was from here. The kingdom of God is within us. And Christ did that. Now, who was Christ? Has he existed now still today? There are books writing who say no. And the references to him, for instance, in Flavius Josephus and all that, are just put there by Christians afterwards, long afterwards, sometimes. So, did he exist? For me, there is no doubt. First of all, there is the confirmation of Sri Aurobindo and Mother. For me, always essential. And the second point is, there is so much indirect confirmation. Because when Christ died on the cross, unbelievable, all had run away. Everybody, except the women. Congratulations to the women. But all his disciples had run away. And Peter had denied him 3 times. I don't know that man. I don't know that man. But you are a Galilean, I hear your accent. And Galilee was a very special place. It was the place, the tinderbox of Judea. Which as a whole was a tinderbox, where everything and anything could explode. There were messiahs here and messiahs there, and prophets prophetizing was still very normal. And then leaders, and there were the people, they were occupied, let's not forget that. I have been living under the German occupation. I know what it means when you hear the Stiefel, the thing when they are coming and all that. In India, they have been living under the English occupation. But our occupiers always arrogant. You are the lower people, we are the high people. They were living among these Romans, these legionaries everywhere. And they wanted their independence of the great holy country that was Israel. Judea was a special place. It was far from Jerusalem. There are so many people arose. And you had, for instance, miracle workers, like Honi the circle drawer. What did Honi do? He was known as a drawer of circles. So there was no rain. And people went to Honi and said, you must see that it rains. And Honi stood and he drew a circle. And he says, Lord, I will not leave this circle as long as it doesn't rain. There were this kind of people, there were other kind of people, and there were many rebels, partisans, nationalists, you name them what you want. So, when all these people had fled, where did they go? Nobody says. But where would they come together? They would come together with the family of Christ. And who became the head of the Christians of the Jesus movement, of the poor, as they called themselves, poor Buddhists? Where were they? They were in Jerusalem. And who was the chief of this family of Christ? It was James. James, the just. You say that Peter was the head of the church? The head of the church was James, the just. And if Peter is now there in St. Peter's, and with all that, and the Pope is replacing the follower of Peter, this is so wrong according to the Gospels itself. James was the leader. And James, like the whole family, this is a very important point in comparison what is happening sometimes nowadays, was a Jew. Of course, Christ was a Jew. And now there are more and more books about Christ the Jew. Since when? Since Dachau. Since the prosecution of the Jews and the destruction, annihilation practically of the Nazis, of the Jews by the Nazis. Now Christ becomes a Jew all at once. No. And now there are books who make him so much Jewish that nothing Christian is left. So at that time, James and his family, they were Jews who had understood the message of love by Christ. Hardly anybody. Don't forget that his disciples were fishermen, farmers, who could not drive. In the Gospel, five times Jesus says, I have told you so clearly and you have not understood anything. The seer of Indra said, have I written 7 years of the Arya all in vain? What do disciples understand? What are they? I have seen people reading, meditating in front of Nirodbana, when Nirodbana was reading his newspaper. And I have the greatest of respect for Nirodbana because he was such a sincere disciple who did not take air. They were meditating in front of Nirodbana while the rest was there at 10 meters. People wonder. So these were Jews behaving as Jews going to the temple. And there James the Just was such a temple goer that they say that his knees became as callous as the knees of a camel just from kneeling down on the pavement of the temple. And then, what do they do? What is happening? See what is happening in Pondicherry. which I hope will not happen. They are watering down the message of that is well being brought by them. And they take in the old gods and go in so many houses of people who are also disciples of Sri Aurobindo. You will find Sri Aurobindo and a mother, maybe 15 times, if not 50. But there will also be Krishna and all the other gods, you know, surely the elephant god, Ganesh, and Sri Aurobindo and mother have become part of the Hindu pantheon. This is very important. So they did exactly the same. You know, when we want to understand, we first take it that they were human. They have only become apostles and superhuman and pseudo-gods afterwards. So, James, you have to behave like that. There were three big ones. James was the leader. Peter was there and John was there. Paul calls them the pillars. So they were there and they said what has to happen and all that. Now, another point of saying that Christ was an avatar is normally, during his life, the avatar is not recognized. And here, as I say, these disciples have not understood a goddamn thing of it. But they were the one who told the stories. And the story about that. And you know, one day we were sitting together, and it was as if he was shining. These are the stories that are going around now, here, everywhere. Sometimes with reason, sometimes without. So all these stories were given here and there, and they became the Gospels later. Embellished still much more. Because this man, unknown, when he died on the cross, crucified, the most scandalous death by the Romans, and very probably put in a common grave somewhere, unknown to history, had made to make a god of. And that, of course, was the big problem. He had been crucified. How do you tell that to people? Because now crucified is just that you say pederast or something nowadays. We do not want a god like that. They had to justify the crucifixion. And how did I do it? By saying, he has raised again after 3 days. Number one. Number two, by saying, you know, has been predicted. And they made of the whole of the Old Testament, of the Jewish Bible, they made the prediction. Christ will there be, you know. And everywhere when they found something, he has humiliated himself and he has been exalted. I had to justify it. Christ being a real avatar. After his death, he was around. He had the mastery of his subtle body. And I saw him, maybe, and much of it again, invention, because they didn't recognize him. On the way to Emmaus, they were walking together with Christ, and they didn't recognize him. But all at once they sat down together and he broke the bread. And because of that they saw that it was Christ. I'm sorry. He had come through the walls. Was this his material body? In John it is written he came into the place through the walls. In other Gospels they say, put your finger here in the wound. And he ate fish. Invention. Because this grows. And everybody is not as sincere in his communication, let be as perceptive as others. And it is a well-known fact, proved by academic experiences, that you produce any event and have 5 witnesses. And you may be sure that all 5 witnesses will tell the event in a different way. But there is the fact that after his death, there was the Pentecost, when the disciples got the inspiration and the power to spread. And there was the second one, and this was Paul of Tarsus. Oh my God, what a writing. Paul of Tarsus. Tarsus, as I have already said, was a high center of Greek philosophy, rivaling Athens, and especially a center of Stoicism. Paul was a very active fundamentalist who went to Jerusalem to study, who assisted the stoners of the first Christian martyr, Stephen, by watching their clothes, who took a letter from the high priest to go to Damascus and persecute these Christians who were saying what? That they were God. But they themselves? But their master, their rabbi, had been God and was the Messiah who has put that together. I think that it was the Hellenist around Stephen, the very first around Thomas, James and the others in Jerusalem. In the beginning, especially because they had to justify the crucifixion. So Paul was a man with a fanatic character who would dedicate his whole life to his conviction. And that is the one who was chosen to become the founder of Christianity. By his experience, so said, on the way to Damascus. But then, this is very interesting, because the letters of Paul, the 7 out of 13, are accepted as historical fact. They were the very earliest writings. He writes practically nothing about the life of Christ. He had not known him. So, he had to have been touched by that experience. Touched is much too weak. He had been thunderstruck, literally, by that experience. He was a very developed character. He spoke Greek, like everybody in the Koine, the Hellenic environment. He wrote in Greek. His letters are the first documents. And what does he write? After I had this experience, I went to Arabia for 3 years. And that is normal. That is human. After having had this incredible upset in his life, he had to go and assimilate. He had to convert himself rationally, with whom nobody knows. Where was Arabia? Arabia could have been Nabatea. You know, Petra and Nabatea, where there are these incredible monuments cut into the rock, these mausoleums, which you see, for instance, I think, in the films, Indiana Jones and the last. Well, was he going there? Because that was a huge center of exchange and trade. Did he go to Damascus at that moment? I'm calling it Arabia around Damascus because it was at the hands of the ruler of Nabatea. Nobody knows. But I have not found a single book that pays attention to these 3 years. Why? Quite simply because the writers in the previous years and nowadays have no idea of such things. They are religious writers if they are not atheists. They have no idea. It's so important to see that so much of the history, everything, most of what I have been telling here now in the past time, cannot be perceived even by the highest scholars and maybe least of all by the highest academics because they have their prejudices and they do not have any idea of the possible reality of a spiritual exploration and a spiritual discovery. Their picture of the human being is different. What is for them the picture of the human being? For materialists, it is pure matter. For the others, it is a compound of matter and intellect. Now, intellect is also being integrated in the matter because the brain is pure matter and the brain does all kinds of things. If I am standing here sweating and trying to tell something coherently and you are there sitting and listening, it is all the brain that does all these things. How? Why? No idea. So it is so normal that Paul withdrew. He had to assimilate, to digest what had happened to him. Who has instructed him? Nobody knows, but it were Gnostics. And Paul was a Gnostic who said, as I have already told, I am not longer living, Christ is living in me. I am no longer a Christian, I am a Christ. And who gave these gradations of the holic person and the psychic person and the thematic person to say, this is the way you have to discover. And what did he say? Oh, shame! I am an apostle. He had never seen Christ, he had not been, he was not of the club. He was a traitor. And that man goes around and says, I am an apostle. Because I have been directly inspired by Christ. Haha, direct inspiration is pure Gnosticism. So since then, what have they done, the church, to soften that up? They have written additional letters, 6 more, to show that Paul was not that heretic, unorthodox, and that he was just a fellow of the church. And since then, they have had incredible trouble with Paul in the church, in the Christian church, because whenever there was a protest, Protestantism of what, they always based themselves on Paul, saying, I am Christ. Belief, hope, faith suffice. Circumcision, to hell with it. Aha! There was Thomas and his Jewish people. And Paul was preaching that. What was he saying? And Paul was in Damascus preaching. And they sent spies. And they saw that Paul was eating with pagans, Greeks, uncircumcised. The Jewish prescription is that you stay within your people and do not, just like the Brahmins and other people in India, do not eat together with others. And they were eating together, and Peter was eating together with Paul, with these foreigners, merchants, not allowed. And Peter, always the same, says, okay, I submit to James and I won't eat with the others anymore. And Paul got into a fury, and this was the first schism within Christianity. And then they went to Jerusalem and they had the first council. And then Thomas says, okay, but you know, you do not drink blood, you do not eat meat that has been sacrificed to the gods. At that time, in the temple, these were always altars burning and the priest ate the meat and it was distributed to prasad, to the believers. You do not eat that, and you do not fornicate. Blood, sorry, this is my body, this is my blood. What had happened? The fact is that what is central to Christianity, and this is the Mass, this is the remnant of the Gnostic mystery meetings. This is the eating together in the meal, the Eucharist, and according to Catholicism, this is the body and blood of Christ. Now, this is impossible. A Jew does not drink blood. This proscription of blood, which is part and parcel of the basic first covenant with Moses on Mount Sinai, will also constitute the first and most fundamental element in James' prohibitions to overseas communities. Proscription. James' proscription of on blood in the directives, as depicted in Acts, Acts is one of the books of the Bible, would seemingly also extend to the consumption of blood of the crucified Messiah, even if taken in the most extreme sense. Mankind was not to eat the blood of flesh with life in it, according to Genesis. Of course, Jews to this day have taken this as the scriptural warrant for a whole complex of legislation involving the killing, preparation, and eating of animal life, kosher. This is a serious point, and what I have read here is written by Robert Eisenman, who is one of the great biblical scholars and a Jew. How then was this spread? Number one, it was spread through the channels of Judaism. Jews at that time were great traders. They went over the whole Mediterranean. They had their houses everywhere. How does Robindonianism spread today? By going to somebody in America, you know, who has been in Pondicherry, you know, connections, all that. How do Indians go through the whole world? By going to the house of Indians and things, people they know, in London, in Montreal, in San Francisco, wherever. This is the way it must have come, and it has been. So, Paul, and other many other missionaries who are unknown, they went to the Jewish community, where there's a Jewish community gathered in the synagogue. And they were there, and what did they do after some time? And what do you believe about? And then the conversation started, and they started to professing their faith in Christ, God, Messiah. Result? One on the chin, thrown out, or riots, and the authorities had to intervene, put them into jail, give them 39 lashes, and all such things. This is all normal. This is how it must have gone. But it was spreading enormously fast. And then, of course, first it was in their own communities a mystery. You had to be initiated. First you were accepted as a catechumen who was instructed. Instructed in what? At that time every community had its own scripture. It was not established. One had a gospel of this, one had a part of a gospel, one had something maybe that had been lost. One had one of the Gnostic gospels discovered in Nag Hammadi. And all that, which were not known. There were 20, 30 gospels, there were many scriptures, there were traditions, and somebody came from Jerusalem and he had known the Christ, or he had known Peter, or he had known one of the other apostles. Hey, tell us the story. How often have I already been asked, tell us about your encounters with the mother? And they sat together and then they embraced, they had their signs of recognition. They had their purification before entering, and then they had the meal together, which was common to all the mysteries, the common meal. And there was wine, and there was bread, blood, in a Jewish community, impossible. This means that the Eucharist has come in long afterwards, saying, Christ, now you are eating Christ. Of course, as soon as that happened, the opponents said they are cannibals. They are eating this and that, and they are sacrificing children and eating the meat. All things that will be said of Jews later by the Nazis and the European, West European persecutors of the Jews. Very strange. They say themselves about others what would be said about them. So these communities were there. And just for the interest, it's now I promise to stop by Slava. and manage. Here, this writer gives a comparison with the Christian and the pagan mysteries, with the Christian and the Dionysian. Christ Dionysus is God made flesh. He is the Savior and Son of God, Dionysus as well as Christ. His father is God, and his mother is a mortal virgin. All the great mystery God had as a mother, a mortal virgin. Why? If their God was God, and he was the Son of the Supreme, he could not be the son of a father, ordinary father and ordinary mother. Number one, his mother, father was very, his mother was very special. She was very pure. Of Mary, it is said she never knew anybody before or after, although the Gospels say that Christ had four brothers and three sisters. And she was impregnated by God through the Spirit, through whatever. Everybody has his story. He is born in a cave or humble cowshed on the 25th of December before three sheep shepherds. Dionysus! He offers his followers the chance to be born again through the rites of baptism. Dionysus. He dies at Easter time as a sacrifice for the sins of the world. Dionysus. After his death, he descends into hell. Then on the third day, he rises from the dead and ascends to heaven in glory. Dionysus. His followers await his return as the judge during the last days, and his death and resurrection are celebrated by a ritual meal of bread and wine, which symbolizes his body and blood. Dionysus, not Christ, because there he doesn't symbolize, it is, which is important. Good. This was spreading very fast. As I had said recently in my, what I read there on these days, the Avatar, the work of the Avatar, cannot be finished at the time he leaves his earthly body. It is going on, and it will be fulfilled one day, and he must be supervising, by way of speaking, directing. Here we have already Paul and Pentecost, and the speed with which Christianity was spreading. Surely there was a force working there. But if there are many, then it becomes difficult. How shall we imagine that they went and made their adherence, that they gained new people, proselytizing people, oh my God. How did they do that? By taking them at their most interested or vulnerable point. You know, you are a slave. Oh my God, you know, if you know Christ, who is God, and you confess Christ, whatever you are, you will go to heaven, because the end of the world is near. And there Christ, surely in his Jewish body, as the Jewish Christ in Galilea, had certain things which are not according to the straight Christian tradition. Apocalypse was one, but the whole world at that time was full of apocalyptic expectations. It was living on that. The world was coming to an end. Nowadays, where are we? I have a book with 50 possible causes of the world ending, all fully illustrated. The world was coming to an end. You know, if you confess, recognize Christ, you will go straight to heaven. Whatever you are, And that is an important point of Christianism, that it was fundamentally a mystery of the soul. Slaves, women, tax collectors, prostitutes. Christ was condemned for moving in such circles. all humans have a soul. And this was in fact the public to which the first missionaries addressed themselves, which they gained. Many women. And in the first mysteries, the Christian mysteries, women and men were the same. And they were very often prophetesses. The spirit was still alive and speaking. So this was quite different from an organized something, because everything must have been different. Everything had heard different stories about Jerusalem and Christ and so on. It must have been a huge panorama of everything you can find here, in other circumstances. And with here I mean around here, you know, the Aurobindo movement. But then came the supervisors. Yeah, but that man is telling completely idiotic things. He is saying we are God so we can all run around naked, there is no sin. Another one is saying we have to commit all the sins before dying to live out, to burn them up, and then our soul can become realized, and so on, and so on, and so on. So the bishops, the episcopoi, the supervisors became the first regulators. One respectable man, coming from there, listening to others. These people were traveling. We have always these maps in our historical atlases. They were traveling. And little by little, the bishops were organizing the church and saying what was true and what was not true. And already in 135, here, 135, there was Ignatius, and Ignatius had to go to Rome to be thrown to the animals. I was very happy. Please let nobody stop me, I'm going straight to him. And follow your bishop. He wrote letters on the road. Follow your bishop, one God, one bishop. And there it came. So then they were having to organize them. How did that go? A mess. Fighting each other, excommunicating each other, and so on. And here already, 200 years, came the first canon of the books that were to be read and the books that were bad. There came the first dogmas. So all that was still in the time of the hidden Christianity, the Christ movement. And then came the time that Constantine became Roman Emperor. Who was Constantine? He was the son of a general. He was a follower of Sol Invictus, the sun god. Surely Mithraic and all that. But he had a kind of a vision, and there was especially the fact that Christians had become so widespread that he said, I need now unity in my empire when he became emperor. So he declared, first of all, in 313, all the religions are admitted and allowed. Christianity became official. And then what he did, he divided the empire into two, which was the thing that was inescapable, because this was Greek and this was barbarian Roman. And now they had four emperors. Two were Caesars. Two were real emperors. They were reigning together, killing each other, killing the whole families and so on and so on. What a story in human history. But Constantine now pronounced Christianity the official religion of the empire. And that as after its most intense persecution. And it is so strange in history that when Fiorbindo said, when the night is darkest, the dawn is near. They became the official religion. And they were heavily funded by the emperors and all the officials. And what was their first reaction? To destroy everything around them that was not Christian. There is not a church that is not built on a pagan sacred place, be it a monument or a building or a grove. Not the church. The Notre Dame is built on that. Chartres is built on that. In Greece, all the churches are built on former pagan sacred places. Because that were the demons. So then, the bishops now became the man in view. They became administrators. They became rich. They were riding in carriages and they had synods and all that. Christianity became dogmatic, God within had been turned into a God without. And from that time they started punching each other's noses within Christianity without pity or compassion. And what were the two big points that were always discussed? It's so simple, it's so human. The first was avatar. Of course they didn't have that word, but they had Christ is human and God. How do you put that together? One said, he was more human. What? He was God. Another said he was only God. Another said he was something in between. And these were the theological discussions going on in all these, and they were communicating with lightnings, and you go to hell, and you go to hell, and you are wrong, and you are pagan, and you are and all that. What was the second point? It was the Trinity. Trinity. Christ was God. God the Son. The Son of Man was the Son of God. He had always talked about his Father. And then there was the Holy Spirit. Who was the most important? Son? The Father? Was the Son like the Father? Had he come after the Father? You have no idea what idiocies have happened because of three words. Homoousios. Homoios. Homoiousios. Greek words for saying he was like the Father, he was the same as the Father, he was something like the councils, excommunications, and who came in between? The emperor. What did the emperor say? The emperor said, what I wish that must be the canon. Constantius II. Constantine was considered to be the 13th apostle. That goddamn killer who had eradicated his whole family in the most cruel fashion, he became the 13th apostle, and everything like that went on. So most, then came the Council of Nicaea, I read that, 325. And there was said the creed, what one had to accept to go to heaven. So it was no longer a matter of realizing that. It was a matter of ethically doing something to be sure that when you die, you went to heaven. At the beginning, baptism was a serious matter. Because once you have been baptized, and you fell in love with thy neighbor's wife, baptism was annulled and you went to hell. It was only gradually that after being baptized you could confess and still go to heaven. And so on, and so on. So you see, this is, I am not denigrating, I am not speaking, because what happened there has happened through the whole of history everywhere. God within, God without. For those who have a living soul, that has the aspiration to evolve, and for those who have not yet an idea, but who are also our human brothers and sisters in humanity. One day I would like to hear it all from this integration of humanity, which is so important for what Sri Aurobindo, the ideal of human unity, actually has intended to say. But then, through that church, now we are already speaking of 300, 400, the invasions of the barbarians were happening. And they invaded Europe from all sides, pushed by the Huns still faster, and so on. From all sides, they were there. Integration of a lower vital character in humanity. But everything necessary. And that is how Christ, through a church, dogmatic Orthodox church, ethicized, humanized that part of humanity. And why is that so important? It was that active, materialistic, vitalistic part of humanity that would colonize the world and wake Asia from its sleep. As Sri Aurobindo has said, Asia at the moment, highest moment of his destiny, was asleep. So this has happened not so long ago, and we are now in the full integration. And this integration is a process, a long-term process, but that is going incredibly fast at the moment. We are really living in a moment of accelerated evolution. If you take what happened since the Renaissance, if you take what happened since the time that Sri Aurobindo and the mother were born and active, if you take what has happened in the 20th century with these two wars, war is the father of all things. And if you take what is going on now, this is just a blink in evolution. We are living in accelerated evolution so much that many, just like me, have the feeling that time is going so fast, as if we are living literally in a time war. Well, here time has gone a little slowly. Thank you very much for your patience.